We get high in back seats of cars. We break into mobile homes. We go to sleep to shake a pill. Never wake up on our own. And that's the way we get by. The way we get by. All that's the way we get by.
Our next guest on Downtown has been making terrific, quirky movies and television shows for about a decade and a half now, since he started with a film that was made right here in the state of Maine, The Puffy Chair. He's got a deal with Netflix to produce movies, and his newest debuts tomorrow. It is a good one, along with Ray Romano. Mark Duplass wrote it, produced it, stars in it as well, and we had a chance to catch up with Mark yesterday and talk about the making of his new movie, Paddleton. Hey, Mark, how are you?
How's it going?
Fantastic, thank you. Well, exciting times in your world.
Oh, man, it's always exciting times. I get to make my stuff. I'm good to go.
Yeah, and you got the team back together, the same people who did the Blue Jay that I thought was so fantastic, back for Paddleton.
Yeah, that was really exciting. I mean, Alex Lehman, who directed Blue Jay for me, is just like, he's one of the greats. He's just very attuned to the human condition. I just love him.
I like this movie so much, and you've talked about leaning into the smallness, those seemingly unimportant details that we all have that tell so much about us. What makes that such a powerful draw for you?
You know, it's interesting. I ever since I was little, I think like I was drawn to just more personal stories, and even when my friends were watching Star Wars and stuff, I was just, I don't know, I was like, weirdly, like watching Woody Allen movies and another, you know, Kramer versus Kramer, things like that, and it's just where my interests lie, I guess. And I think I realized, luckily, that a place like Netflix, who, you know, we do a group of movies with, they really still see value in that. And I think because they make so many kinds of things, and you know, it's almost like the bigness of that company subsidizes the little movies, and I'm just really lucky they have, you know, targeted us to let us do what we do there.
Ray Romano is so great in this movie. And of course, everybody loves Raymond. I loved him in that. But I also loved, it wasn't on for very long, but Men of a Certain Age was such a good series. What did you see in Ray Romano that made you feel he'd be the right guy to play Andy?
Yeah, you know, I would love to take credit for what I'm calling the Romanescence right now. but the truth is, you know, everybody saw it before I did. You know, Jason Kadams, who ran the show Parenthood, cast him as Lauren Graham's love interest, and we saw him do something so unique there. I think we saw the seeds of this in Men of a Certain Age. Kumail Nanjiani, you know, playing opposite him in The Big Sick, was really showing his range. And so I was just tapping into what people were already seeing, which is Ray's ability to inhabit the everyday, the minutiae, the small things, which he had done for primarily comedic effect over the years, worked so well in the dramatic realm. And, you know, I was just really exploiting what I was already seeing, and was still lucky to have him.
You worked from an outline. A lot of what we see on the film was improvised. Obviously, Ray, being a stand-up, is pretty comfortable with that kind of thing.
He is totally uncomfortable with that kind
really?
Of thing. Ray is Ray will trick everyone. He looks so casual and relaxed, but he is... And he'll tell you this, too. He is the most neurotic, the most nervous person. He was terrified to come do this movie because despite how talented he is, and I think this is partially why he's so talented, is he's second-guessing his every move. You know, he wants it to be good. He's not sure if he can do it. And he's just so wonderful to work with in that regard. But yeah, when you have no script to lean on, it gets a little scary sometimes because sometimes we'll do a take and it just falls dead. We're like, oh God, what do we do? But that's part of the fun of the process, is what you sacrifice and lose, and you know, in preparation. And you guys see that, you know, you do a big show at like the Penobscot Theater and you rehearse it and it's great. That's just different than what we do. We are trying to find something in the moment, and when you find it, it's really exciting. But when you don't, it's, you know, it's a little scary.
You also had to invent your own game for this. The title of the film, Paddleton, is based on a game that you and Ray's character play. And I like the idea so much that it's not a game where you compete against each other, but you play with each other, and then that ties in so much to the message of the film.
That really is the core of what this movie is about. You know, you've got these two sort of outlier guys, you know, and they don't really fit in that well in the world. You know, their apartments are, they're just not that great. They have dead end jobs. They don't have a lot of friends or social skills, but they found each other and they are each other's perfect person. And that's a unique story for me, which is, it's kind of the When Harry Met Sally of platonic male relationships. And what I really love about them is that the way that guys normally relate on screen is usually sort of like a gruffer, quote-unquote, bromance level. And the way I experience my male relationships is I don't know, it's just different. It was like a lot of hugging and sweetness. And we wanted to show a relationship that, you know, is all about working together against the world, and that the game of Paddleton is the perfect metaphor for that.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because that's what stood out to me, that this is not, I don't even like that term bromance. It's not that at all. And in this case, these two guys are, you know, they're not particularly glib. They don't have a lot of flowery speech, and yet they communicate this love for each other, this care, and it's done, I don't know, the way my friendships are. And I'm around Ray's age, but most of my friends that I hang out with are people in their early 40s, and there's that whole dynamic as well. I just thought it was such a great, honest portrayal of male friendships, and we don't see that much in movies.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because that is what we're going for. And, you know, I'm very aware as a creator these days that all of you out there have 400 movies on your Netflix queue that you want to see, you know, and I don't want to add to your onus of things you need to see unless I'm offering you something unique, you know, and that's very hard to do. And I'm not going to sit here and preach from my soapbox that I made a perfectly original film. But I do think there are not many movies out there that portray male friendship as I know it in this way. And, you know, and in particular, these two guys, they have nothing technically good going for them in their lives, but they're so happy and fulfilled with each other. And I kind of find them aspirational in that way. You know, my life is wildly more successful than I ever could have imagined, you know, and yet still, I'm shopping on Amazon, buying things, trying to fill those little holes and voids. And these guys have so much less than me and are so much happier. And I take them as kind of an inspiration in that way.
We're talking with Mark Duplass about his new film, Paddleton. You two are great together. I absolutely love the scene. I believe her name, I want to make sure I get it right, Dendry Taylor, the scene in the hot tub.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was great.
Yeah, Dendry is this wonderful actress. You know, I first saw her, she played one of the sisters in that movie, The Fighter, you know, and she really got that sort of Massachusetts thing down. It's hard to get right. And then I cast her in my show, Room 104. We did an all-dance episode of Room 104.
That's right. She was in that. Yes.
Oh. Yeah, she was in that. And so she's become one of our sort of core team players. And she was really great. You know, she does this wonderful scene where it has a little flirtation with Ray's character. And, you know, it's hard to come in and drop in the middle of a movie and improvise all the dialogue. And that's sort of why we continue to work with people that we like and that we know, and we build a community. And, you know, Alex, the director, and I had made Blue Jay before this with Sarah Paulson. And we have a trust and, you know, and a camaraderie. And I really like making movies with a little tribe of people that we kind of, you know, just stick in the trenches through the years.
Now, I have to ask, was Ray's halftime speech improvised?
So Ray's halftime speech comes from Ray himself. He brought this to the table. It's something that he thought would be funny, but that he has also been working on. So Ray Romano himself worked tirelessly on the halftime speech and prepared it for that. And, you know, a lot of the things in this movie, the idiosyncrasies that you'll see of how these guys are and how they relate, they come a lot from conversations that Ray and Alex and I all had before we shot the movie. We would do these meetings, and rather than traditional rehearsals, because there was no script, we'd say, what are the kind of things they would talk about? What are the kind of games they play? Oh, they probably are obsessed with, like, B Kung Fu movies. And we literally shot and made a kung fu movie that was specifically for this film. And, you know, we said they probably just eat frozen pizzas all the time and pick a different game every night. And so we built the whole world around it. And And Ray is a lot like that, and so we stole a lot from him.
Well, now I'm waiting for the release of Death Punch.
Yeah, you know, Death Punch was is the sort of seminal kung fu movie within Paddleton that they're obsessed with, and Alex, our director, kept telling me, "I want to shoot Death Punch. I want to make a movie called Death Punch." But Alex, that's ridiculous. Let's just go find an old kung fu movie and we'll license the footage and use that, you know. And I got to give it to him. He was dogging. He's like, "I'll go an hour outside of town. I'll shoot it so cheaply. It's going to be worth it." And so I gave it to him, and he just nailed it.
All right. Was I reading too much into this? Because I'm always looking for details in the movie. I'm pretty sure I spotted DNR on the license plate.
Yeah, there are always little things that your department heads do that are called Easter eggs that they drop throughout the movie. And our production designers dropped a little something in there. That's an incredible catch on your part. We thought that would be more of a third viewing kind of situation.
I also love, too, reading an interview you did somewhere else out there, and the fact that people are interpreting that hot tub scene in different ways. And I don't want to spoil anything in the movie, but I just interpreted that. My perspective was that Ray's character is a little bit awkward, but also so caught up in what's going on with his best friend that he can't think of anything else.
Yeah, I think that's right, you know, but, you know, to your point about the way a movie like Paddleton can play differently for different people in different settings, we really enjoy that. You know, we're not trying to make a movie that is our vision very clearly, and we want to exact that vision upon you. What we're trying to do is create, you know, a genuine experience, and then you can walk away with it with what you get. For instance, you know, this is a dramatic comedy. There's no doubt about this. This is a movie as about two friends dealing with the impending death of one of them. And that's dramatic. But Ray Romano is also in it, and he's really, really funny. And so when we play this movie at Sundance in front of 1,500 people, there's uproarious laughter in the movie. It almost feels like you're watching a screening of Dumb and Dumber at times. But then I think when you watch this at home at Netflix, it plays much more dramatically. And it is very subjective in that way, and I think that's great.
I'm not 100% sure that it plays that much differently, because I was watching it late last night and had to keep the laughter down so I didn't wake my wife up, because the lines work when you're whether you're seeing it in a theater at Sundance or watching it in the dark at 11:30 at night.
That makes me happy you had some late night giggles. That's a big goal for us.
Yeah, and then, you know, the punch to the gut sneaks up on you because you're laughing and you're enjoying these two, even though you know where it's going. When you get there, you're like, "Oh my God, why did you do this to me, Mark?"
Yeah, I think that, you know, when we wanted to make a movie like this, we felt like it was important to have the back half of the movie be truthful and be gentle and be slow, and not be pushed in any way, and almost have it feel like a documentary. And, you know, without saying too much, a lot of those last scenes, we would shoot 15, 20-minute takes unrehearsed. Mm. The cameraman wouldn't even know where we were going, and we would light the whole apartment so that we could just have it unfold much more slowly and naturally in real time, and give it the honor of, I guess, a more truthful experience. And it was really... it was very emotional because we shot the movie in sequential order, you know, so every scene, normally when you shoot a movie, you just jump all over the place for whatever's practical. And we tried to shoot as much as we could from scene one forward. And by the time we got to the end, it was like Ray and I had spent these sort of beautiful 2 to 3 weeks together. And it was just quite emotional, kind of, you know, experiencing what we experienced there at the end together.
Well, I can imagine. Now, my quandary is this: how do I work fatty pork into casual conversation with people?
It's a really, really good question. You know, the life of these two guys, Michael and Andy, is dominated by small little games. And to a small degree, that actually is based on me and Jay, and me and my kids even. I'm in this phase where my daughters are 11 and 6, and we do this thing in the morning where we play Game Olympics. We get out, like, every board game in the house and just, like, plow through all 25 of them. And one of the games that is played is this sort of this this looming hangman that one of the friends cannot get, and how that's resolved. So, yeah, if you can work Fatty Pork out, man, I hope it becomes a national phenomenon.
Yeah. I like the board game idea. My little guy, my five-year-old, when it's just the two of us, I will create games, but that's now become an obsession with him. But he calls them mind games. I hope no one else hears it when he says, Dad, come up with some more mind games for us to play.
Oh, I love it. Here's a recommendation. We created a game together as a family. We call it Emoji Guess. Okay, so you take little index cards, you cut them in half, and you take all the sticker emojis that all these kids inevitably have, and you put one emoji sticker on each card, and then you play charades with the emoji and have to act out the emojis, and it's good because little kids don't have to read words or anything. That's great for the little ones.
Oh, I like that a lot. Hey, before we let you go, I wanted to say just another great season of Room 104, and you had told us about this last time we talked, the season 2 finale, Josie and Me, written by Bangor native Lauren Budd, and what a terrific episode that was.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, this is one of the first episodes of television to air on HBO that was written by a 19-year-old person. And, you know, Lauren and her mother, Mary, you know, they're family to us. And Mary helped produce, you know, my wife Katie's movie, Black Rock, which we shot all in Down East Maine. And they're just such, I mean, just an incredibly creatively talented family. But Lauren in particular, you know, she wrote that episode. She's out here with us now, and she's writing more for us, and you know, just couldn't be prouder of what she is turning into.
And you had so many talented folks on the show this season. Mahershala Ali, Natalie Morales, Rainn Wilson, and Katie in an episode as well.
Yeah, I wrote an episode for Katie Azleton there, playing someone who believes she is an artificial intelligence being, and we're not sure if she is absolutely insane or maybe is, and that was really fun for me to write her something so she could just do something wildly different.
And now, you've already shot season 3, is that right?
That's right. We shot seasons 2 and 3 together in a big block, and then we're in the writer's room actually today, cranking away at season 4. So, you know, we're just really lucky that HBO lets us have this little late night sandbox where we just get to tell crazy stories in a hotel room and just kind of do whatever we want.
Well, that's great news indeed. Paddleton opens tomorrow night, Friday, on Netflix. You want to check it out with Mark and Ray Romano. It is really terrific. Mark, thank you so much. Really did love the movie. God, it was so great. And as always, good to talk with you.
Thank you for the support, as always.
It's our friend Mark Duplass, Paddleton. And I don't know if it's one of those, is that like a 1201? It goes active on Netflix kind of thing for them?
I believe so. Most Netflix stuff kicks off right at midnight of the day that it drops.
Well, not just saying that. I mean, we both watched it. We got the secret backstage pass to watch the movie early. And it really is a wonderful little film with always in Mark's films. So much honesty, humor, but some great acting. Ray Romano, it's one of the best things he's done. Mark is always solid. The supporting cast is great, and it's good. I watch it again this weekend, I think. But be ready. You might want to have a box of tissues nearby just in case, but good stuff there.